call our first case this afternoon, which is case number 76632, Bailey versus Connie Bisbee, I guess former parole board chair. For the attorneys, we have Mr. Stout for the appellant, Ms. Stout for the appellant, and Mr. Honey for the respondents. Do I have it backwards? They're like the... Sorry. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. So the appellant, do you want to reserve any time? 2 minutes? Very well. You may proceed.
Larry Bailey was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to life with the possibility of parole after 5 years for a murder that was committed in 1995. To date, Mr. Bailey has served almost 25 years in prison. While he's been incarcerated, Mr. Bailey has demonstrated consistent and sustained efforts towards rehabilitation. At the time of his last parole hearing in 2017, he had participated in several different DOC's certified programming options. He had participated in self-help groups. He had participated in groups specifically tailored to address the behaviors that led to incarceration. He had taken the victim awareness and empathy class 5 times, and he had also participated in vocational classes. He had maintained steady employment in the prison industry, and he had not had any disciplinary infractions since April 23rd of 2009, almost a decade. Mr. Bailey has had parole hearings 5 times, beginning in 2003, again in 2008, 2011, 2014, and 2017. In March of 2017, Mr. Bailey was again denied parole. He sought reconsideration, and he was again summarily denied on June 13th, 2017. Mr. Bailey filed a petition seeking a writ of mandamus, asking that the board vacate the 2017 parole hearing and that he be allowed a new hearing which will use standards specific to inmates sentenced to life without parole. His contention was that the standards and the tool that was used by the board to assess that the risk assessment tool used by the board was not appropriately tailored to his particular
inmate. What about the gang affiliation? What evidence was presented there at the hearing?
There's no evidence in the record that Mr. Bailey was an active gang member at the time. He raised the argument below. It was not addressed at all by the board, and therefore can be presumed to be admitted.
Was there any classification? I mean, sometimes people go in 25 years before classified as gang members, and then throughout something occurs and they get reclassified. What you're saying is there was no evidence of any gang affiliation at all at the time of their decision?
There is nothing in the record below. The record below included the pre-sentence report from an earlier conviction, I believe, was 1992, and then also the pre-sentence report for the 1995 murder. And neither of those made reference to any gang affiliation.
And you're saying he otherwise... I'm sorry. Don't they have other... There's nothing that was on the record or notes saying that there was any other type of, like, internal classification.
Did they validate him? Did the NDOC validate him as a gang member or affiliate?
And according to the board's own procedural regulations and guidelines, it either should be in the pre-sentence report or there should be validation, and there's no evidence in the record that Mr. Bailey had been validated as an active gang member. Okay. While Nevada law does not provide an inmate with any right or expectation in release on parole, Nevada law does provide that an inmate, once eligible, is entitled to consideration for parole. However, where the factors and the information being provided and considered aren't up to date and aren't complete, that consideration can't be meaningful. And unless the consideration is meaningful, the act of evaluation is not going to meet the statutory requirements. In determining whether or not to grant parole, Nevada law requires that the board have specific factors that are tailored to specific populations of inmates. One of those populations is inmates serving a life sentence. The regulations and the tool that was crafted in accordance with this particular requirement is a risk assessment tool that balances the severity of the underlying offense against the likelihood of success on parole, essentially a risk of recidivism. The severity of the underlying crime is determined in accordance with the severity that was determined by the Department of Corrections. The risk assessment, however, is determined using a tool that was created by the parole board.
Would it have changed, though, the outcome, even if it was a low risk than a medium risk? I mean, couldn't they have still come back with the same decision, which was deny parole, even if we were to decide it was improper? Couldn't they have still, looking at the aggravating and mitigating factors, have still said no parole?
Absolutely. Mr. Bailey is not challenging the discretion that the parole board has in weighing or considering those factors. What Mr. Bailey is contending is that the factors being considered, which are required by statute, must be suitable to provide fair evaluation of a person in his situation, which is someone serving an extremely long sentence. But you are correct. It does not necessarily dictate any particular outcome. In determining risk, the board uses a tool that identifies 11 different factors that provide an initial assessment of risk. It includes 6 what they call static factors and then also 5 more dynamic factors. The static factors being ones that are going to have already been determined at the time an inmate is incarcerated. The dynamic factors, in theory, should be able to demonstrate change in circumstances during the course of incarceration. The dynamic factors relate to age, gang membership, participation in treatment programs and educational programs, the disciplinary history of the inmate, and the current custody level, meaning whether they're maximum, minimum, or medium security. However, because of the way these factors are applied, they essentially become static factors. For example, where someone has participated in any educational program, they get a yes, and so then they get a 1-point deduction. However, it doesn't demonstrate, it doesn't convey to the board whether or not that person has made sustained efforts over the course of their incarceration, which for inmates who've been sentenced to life can be an extremely long time. So essentially, once they participated in one program, it becomes a static factor that doesn't provide the board with new or different information when the inmate comes back for a second or third or fourth parole hearing.
Well, it may be that they only get a 1-point deduction, but isn't the board made aware of efforts that they're making or programs they're taking, even if the deduction is only 1 point?
The fact that there may be other ways, and granted that there are other ways that the board can obtain information, doesn't mean that the board doesn't have to satisfy the statutory mandate of creating and using criteria that is specifically tailored to this particular inmate population. And moreover, the fact is that they use the points to then determine whether someone is high, medium, or low risk. So if the factors don't allow for a demonstration of changed circumstances, a person can't necessarily change their risk level. And so it doesn't demonstrate any change in that person's likelihood of being successful on parole, which is what the statute requires.
If you could clarify that, I'm not sure I understand your point. I appreciate that there are certain static factors. Mm-hmm. No matter what, you can't, those are immutable. The severity of the crime you committed, you know, those types, you're stuck with those. But then we have the dynamic factors, which it seems like with education or programming, you're saying it doesn't seem like that should be enough. Somebody's in 30 years and they educate themselves or in programs, they're only going to get 1 point. Is that the point that you're making?
It's not so much the fact that it's only 1 point, but that it doesn't provide any information about whether or not it's been a sustained effort during the course of being incarcerated 10, 20, 30 years, that one course, their first year, is going to tick them on to the yes, and so they get the 1 point deduction. But it doesn't provide the board with the information about what that inmate's current efforts are or whether it's been a sustained effort during the course of their incarceration.
Well, why doesn't the board, whether or not it gets a point value, why doesn't the board get that information? You go for parole, don't you provide the board with information about what you're doing, what you've been doing? Even if you only get 1 point off for it, you're telling me the board is not aware of sustained efforts or efforts that are being made?
There are other mechanisms and ways that that information can be provided to the board, absolutely.
But it's not about mechanisms. Is it provided? Doesn't an inmate say, hey, here's what I'm doing. I'd like to be considered for parole, whatever mechanism. I'm separating that from the point system. Is the board aware of what the inmate's doing?
Yes, the inmate has the opportunity to provide that information to the board.
Okay.
However, one, I think that it is important to note that here, the information that's used to calculate this criteria is information that is gained from the inmate report provided by the Department of Corrections. And I would assume that perhaps it's given a bit more weight or credibility where that information is provided. And so the results of the tool might be more readily relied upon. Additionally, that's information that's provided in advance that allows for consideration and review as opposed to information that the inmate has to be able to convey at the time of the hearing. But again, even where that information is otherwise made available, Nevada law mandates that the criteria being used be specifically tailored to provide this information. And so if the tool itself isn't providing the information, then it's not meeting the statutory mandate. And additionally, because it is a point system, and I'm not quibbling about the number of points, but because you do have them then categorized as low, medium, or high risk, where the points cannot be changed, it doesn't allow an inmate to demonstrate that they have done things that would reduce the risk of recidivism.
Did you want to reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Honey, on behalf of the state.
Thank you, Justices. Adam Honey on behalf of the respondents. In Nevada, parole or probation is grace of the state. And the creation of the standards that Mr. Bailey complains of today as being static or dynamic do not create a liberty right or create a cause of action to those standards. What Mr. Bailey is seeking today is unprecedented in Nevada. The most recent case to deal with something close to this would be the Anselmo case, where the court said, you know, we won't review the regulations and guidelines and the statutes, but we will review whether or not they were applied correctly. And we'll do that in that case in a very limited circumstances of that matter, where it was a 4-3 vote by the parole board, very close, and using the mitigating factors and the, excuse me, lost track of the word, the factors that add to the...
Aggravating.
Excuse me?
Aggravating.
Oh, thank you so much. I was going to say antagonizing. I knew that wasn't right. The aggravating factors...
They can't be agonizing.
They can be. In Anselmo, they realized, or the court ruled, this court ruled, that, hey, you guys have applied a factor that isn't applicable to this guy. And so they didn't rule as to the standards that were created by legislation and through administrative code. They were ruling on the application of them. And here, application isn't an issue. I think the justice has got to it already, in regards to the gang affiliation, it really is a distinction that makes no difference. Because he's the highest severity of crime, I mean, we say it politely that he was convicted of murder. Okay, he was already in prison for a violent felony. He was put on parole. While on parole, he murdered his boss by strangulation at a Pizza Hut, a 21-year-old man. Now he goes back to parole, goes back to prison. He's had parole hearings 3-4 times approximately. He's still in prison, which is why we're here today. But what they're asking today is they're saying, hey, go back, and we actually want the standards and the guidelines changed. And this court has never done that. And the reason they haven't done that is because the Nevada legislature has said by statute, it's a grace of the state, the standards do not create a cause of action. We simply don't have a cause of action to grant them the reversal of the writ that was denied at the district court level.
Let me go ahead, and then I'll go. Let me ask you a question, Mr. Honey. So, just more granular, let's talk about the gang affiliation for a moment. The guidelines, your guidelines, say that it's 0 points if you've got no gang affiliation or 2 points if you do. And the guidelines, as I understand them, say that in order to get that 2 points, you either have to be validated by the NDOC as a gang member, or it has to be in your PSI.
Correct.
Was he validated by the NDOC, or was it in his PSI? So what evidence did the board use to apply their own guidelines there, to give him 2 points?
I'm new to the case. So as far as I can tell from the record, in this case the Supreme Court, the denial of parole indicates gang affiliation. That was on page 79 of the exhibits. That is not a validation from NDOC. That is not in his pre-sentence investigation report. Okay? So there's that. But again, the way under NAC 213.516, the way the table works, if you're the highest severity of crime, which he is, for strangling his boss, murdering him, there's only three outcomes on the risk assessment part. High, deny parole. Medium or low, which in this case he was deemed medium. Medium, low are the same thing. Go to the factors under NAC 213.518, and that's what we did. So that's why I call it a distinction without a difference. I believe as Justice Silver said, it wouldn't have made any difference in his risk assessment, whether he's moderate or low. Either way, we end up at the same place.
That's what I was asking.
The 2 points doesn't move him to low. It's just moderate, low?
Moderate and low are two separate categories, but they both say consider the factors under NAC 213.518. So they say the same thing.
But before we get there, does that 2 points make a difference on where you start for this gentleman?
No.
So he would still be moderate?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's my question.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, he would be low.
So if you took the 2 points off, then he's low.
Yes. But he still is... The application of 213.518 is the same under moderate or low. You go to the same place, and then you start looking at the factors, which is exactly what we did. And unlike Anselmo, there's no allegation that reviewing those factors was done incorrectly or misapplied or didn't apply to him. They're saying all of those guidelines, all those standards, all those factors are wrong. Because he's been in prison a long time, and it affects these guys that have been in prison for a long time differently. And really, been in prison a long time, in this case, is synonymous with the people that have committed the highest, most severe crimes that have the longest sentences.
Well, if we weren't to go with what the relief that they're requesting here in, their, in the appellant's brief, which is, you know, change all the rules, and we just look at this case, which is what I think Justice Stiglitz was getting at, your statement to the court would be that even if they were incorrect and they could have deemed him low, that the outcome here would not have changed because of the aggravation, as far as the aggravating circumstance, I guess, of the crime, that he would not have been granted grace. Does this make a difference, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I believe it does not make any difference. And another to be distinguished from Anselmo is where that was a 4-3 vote. This was a 7-0 vote. This wasn't a close call, so to speak. Now, I can't sit here and tell you how the parole board would vote. But I'm looking at it, when the court in Anselmo took the extraordinary decision to have a new hearing because a misapplied factor, I get it. It was a close call. This factor didn't apply to him. Here, it wasn't a close call, and there is no factor or allegation of factor being misapplied. Again, they're just saying, the whole system's unfair to me, says Mr. Bailey.
I'm sorry. Please, Chief.
Ms. Turner, I'm still a little confused on this validation of being a gang member here. You're not sure about that?
Yeah, the parole board's understanding is that in 2004, he self-reported involvement with gang affiliation, the Crips. His PSI indicates that he goes by the monikers, I believe, Iceman and Ice Cold, maybe. I may be off slightly like that. But it is silent as to he's a member of the Crips. It doesn't say that. And so as far as validation, I'm not aware of my review of the records in front of this court of an NDOC, Nevada Department of Correction, validation.
Where did you get the 2004 self-identification? I'm sorry, where did you get that?
I think I got it from briefing.
Oh, okay.
Done for my
not for the record, then.
It's not. Okay. Again, the only document is the denial of parole, page 79, where they say that he was in a gang member. So apparently the parole board was under the belief that he was a gang member. But as far as validation goes, I'm not aware of NDOC validation or validation of a... So I've only seen two PSIs of his last two parole hearings. I didn't see the others. And quite frankly, they aren't before the court to be considered anyways at this point.
So if he wasn't... It's your position, as I understand it. Say there... He shouldn't have got 2 points if there's not an NDOC validation or in the PSI. And from what I understand, we don't have that. So he probably shouldn't have got 2 points.
Correct, as far as I can tell.
So he would be low.
Correct.
So your position is that even if he was low, even if the report said no gang, that this would still be a 7-0. Like we just did, it wouldn't change it at all, the perspective of the board members. Because it's just in applying the guidelines, like, it's just of no consequence?
Agreed. Because they go back to the factors under 213.51A, and those factors aren't altered whether or not he's moderate or low on the risk assessment.
Okay. Answering that question, Mr. Honey, it's our understanding that Mr. Bailey's received notice that he's eligible for a parole hearing in March of this year. Are you and opposing counsel aware of that?
I will speak on behalf of opposing counsel as to that. I became aware of it yesterday,
okay.
And that's why I filed that notice to the court a little.
Well, thank you for doing that, because it kind of gets a frame of reference on the time here and dealing with it. So is your position that moots out the requests here made by the Mr. Bailey?
If he has it. My position would be that if you had a parole board hearing prior to a written decision from this court, that would moot this matter.
Okay. Well, sometimes we can be fast. I don't know if we can be quite that fast for March, but we'll see. Okay. Go ahead. Anything else you want to say?
Okay. Just a moment.
Well, following up though, what the chief just asked. I'll ask that on rebuttal. Because if he goes before the board next month, is this something that would be contested if, in fact, legal aid was to represent him, I guess, at his hearing, to follow through and represent him at his hearing? Is this something that you could say, you've said it said 2004 self-represented. I mean, that's 16 years ago. People get out of gangs in that time period, especially as they get older. Is that something that becomes more contested and... Does that moot this whole thing? If she was to go, does it moot this whole, I guess, argument?
I'm sorry, I lost track with your question. We're talking about the mootness if the parole board hearing is...
Right, they have the hearing, she goes before, she brings up contestant, and she says, look, there's no gang affiliation, and they go with that. Does it moot this issue here as far as, like,
well...
It's been brought up to the parole board, and then that same day they go denied. I mean, do we get something at that point if we're in the process of our deliberation?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, When he goes up for parole in March of 2020.
Right, and she goes up and she says there's nothing gang related. And they bought, and they say, okay, you're right. And now we give him low assessment. And they deny his parole that day. Do you send us something? Does that make this all moot at that point, I guess?
Potentially, I think it would be up for argument, right? I would file a motion at that time.
You see what I'm saying?
There is one other thing, and I don't know if I'm going off of what you're asking. When he goes to parole in 2020, it may very well be that because of what's come out in this case and gang affiliated or not gang affiliated, they may go back and find older PSIs. And they might find a PSI that shows that he's gang affiliated.
Mr. Hunt, only two PSIs, 92 and the murder, right?
You can have, I mean.
He's been in and out of jail and
but his murder PSI, his murder PSI, and if it doesn't have it, he's not going to have it then.
You bring a good point. Maybe there isn't an additional PSI.
Right. There isn't after the murder. That's it. You go in and that's it.
Well, no, I'm saying there might be a prior one from a prior crime.
Okay, that's fair.
That's what I'm thinking. Because he allegedly self-reported in 04. If there's some other, I don't know.
I want to just back up real quick.
Yes.
Those are, because it's terms of art. Whether you're suspect to be in a gang, whatever, it's a term of art that's dictated by your guidelines. Validation is the term of art, and that is that's what gets you the 2 points.
Correct.
You've said that there's no difference, but doesn't NAC 213.516 indicate that if you get a severity level of high, which we agree he has a severity level of high, and a risk level of low, that the board's got to grant parole at the first or second meeting in which they consider him for parole?
No.
No.
Because if you look at this, on the left side of 516,
sure,
you've got severity level, and he's the highest. And nobody's disputing that because of the murder he's
committed. No, he's where he is.
So then you go to the right for the risk level.
Okay.
The moderate is considered factor set forth in 213.518. If he's low, if we take off the 2 points, the court says, you know, it's not validated, he still stays in consider factor set forth in NAC 213.518. If I may real quickly, I only have about a minute and 50 seconds left. Thank you. Mr. Bailey's seeking that the standards and guidelines be altered to better fit into somebody like himself with a long term is best left to the purview of the legislature. The controlling statute that says the standards that they create for parole do not create a cause of action, I think firmly puts it in their hands. The arguments that he has that these guidelines are static or dynamic, don't go to somebody who's been in prison for long term, should be taken up with the legislation and should be dealt with that way, given the statute as to parole being a grace of the state. And finally, they made an argument that they're entitled to meaningful consideration of parole. Meaningful consideration, I don't know what that means in Nevada, because it's not in any statute. It's purely taken out of two federal cases and a state case out of Ohio, none of which are applicable to this situation. In those cases, the Ohio case had to do with parole being decided based on the crime you were charged with and convicted. And they said, wait a second, that violates due process because he wasn't convicted of those crimes. You're denying parole because of what he was charged with and not convicted. And then the two federal cases also didn't apply as well. So this whole meaningful consideration is a non-starter of an argument. Thank you.
Chief, may I just throw one thing out? I think after Anselmo, I think takeaway is meaningful, at least on one level, means you're going to apply your own guidelines and standards.
Correct.
You get to make the rules, and so as a base level, you've got to apply it.
Correct.
Right?
And the cases,
that's fair to say.
And the cases cited as the meaningful consideration by Mr. Bailey didn't go to the applying of those standards, and that's why I distinguished them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Honey. Ms. Scott, you have about 2.5 minutes left. Hmm?
Thank you. I'll make a couple points. Mr. Honey was arguing that this is something best left to the legislature. The legislature is the one that said there must be, the board shall adopt by regulation specific standards for each type of convicted person. They identify six different categories of convicted persons, one of which is people serving a term of imprisonment for life. Therefore, the legislature has made a determination, and they did determine that this is something that's important, that these standards be tailored and specific to different categories, because otherwise it's not providing relevant and current information. if the tool that's being used doesn't demonstrate any change in circumstances over time, then it's not providing current information because essentially these factors just become additional static factors. The fact that someone's allowed to come back for an additional parole hearing, that we allow people to reevaluate every three to five years depending on the circumstances, is because we expect that there's the possibility that these individuals could demonstrate a greater likelihood of success on parole than they did last time they were here. But where the tool doesn't allow them to demonstrate any change, and it doesn't allow them to move from one category to another, from medium to low, that's not providing the board with useful information. Additionally, with respect to the gang affiliation, we agree. Whether it's medium or low, the board would then look to the mitigating and aggravating factors. However, if the board believes that Mr. Bailey is a gang member, that could very likely affect their assessment of those aggravating and mitigating factors and whether he's likely to be successful on parole, whether he's likely to be continue to be involved in criminal activities. Where the board is mistaken about someone being a gang member, that is material. And the fact that someone initially is presented as being low risk is different from being moderate risk. And again, it doesn't change the outcome. That discretion is left entirely to the board in terms of how they weigh and assess those factors. But the factors themselves need to be useful, and they need to be specifically tailored to this population of inmates.
Ms. Scott, we have one or a question, so you can respond to that. Mr. Honey had an opportunity to. So we know there's going to be a parole board hearing set in March, so it's February, what, 6th today, so I don't know what the date is in March, but coming up next month. Should we be holding this case in abeyance till we see what happens with that parole hearing? Since you wanted a new hearing, as far as the relief you sought here, it's happening with or without our intervention. What's your position on what we should do at this stage?
With respect to the issue of the gang affiliation, presumably they could, you know, it could be clarified and it could be determined whether or not they're applying it correctly, and that could potentially moot this decision. However, the second issue that we've raised as to whether or not the consideration and the tools used to evaluate my client meet the statutory requirements isn't going to be mooted at this next hearing.
Okay. Great. Thank you both very much. Thank you for your excellent arguments and briefs. Ms. Stout, thank you for taking this pro bono case. We really appreciate that as part of our pro bono program, and you certainly did an excellent job for your client, and we appreciate it very much for both of you. So we'll take this case under submission. We would ask, though, if we don't have a decision, maybe you could both give us a status for the court, file with the court after the parole hearings. At least we know what happened with it, and either a joint one, or if you want to do it separately, that's fine. But in the meantime, we'll start working it up and see where we're at then. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you both again. Okay, let's go ahead and call our next.